I get to be a technician with all the microphones, cords, recharging, downloading. Are there any questions or anything to share? So she's saying, and this can give us inspiration that someday may be possible to be very concentrated. She's saying that when she's concentrated, the mind can get sharp, and really the thought comes and the mind sees the thought. Like she was doing with her hands, like cutting motion. And when that happens, sometimes she feels tension, kind of dense, here in the forehead, head, eyes, And then she notices that and wonders and tries the belly or the feet to see if that changes anything. And she says, maybe it helps. She's still checking it out. So, we start with paying attention the way that we can, which is with the thinking mind, which is the thing that we've most used and trusted and developed, or we can say trusted. We've been taught to use and trust the thinking mind if possible, and many times it's really the emotional thinking mind, and we're more or less able to admit or know the thinking or emotional side. Some people think they're thinkers and really they're really emotional people. And some people think they're really emotional people, but really they're strong thinkers as well. So it goes together. So we use that tool to start. And it does get more sharp sometimes. For some people, it can grow to be more sharp. And when the conditions are right, it can sharply notice thought. It can sharply notice what kind of thought, like judgment or whatever. And luckily, there could be some sensitivity to notice that maybe that's not the end. Maybe that was one step that seemed impossible last year or 10 years ago or yesterday or whatever, when I couldn't catch any thought. Now the step has been taken. And it could feel sometimes even like a dead end, like, oh, I took that step and now what? I have a headache. Here I am, me and my thoughts. So what? Which is also true, but it's not a dead end. It's a time to again pause and open and see where is the next step. After the meditation, after lunch, I walked out of the hall, and for the first time I noticed that there's steps going down and a passage underneath the hall here. I'd never seen that before. Not that I've spent that much time here, but still. So I just went to see, check it out. And I met some trees. Nice trees. And a whole different perspective of the hall and our world here. And it gave a very cool, little bit trippy space to the head space. And it's curious because it's my subject for the talk today, for the steps. So we can notice the different kind of phases. Sometimes we're really struggling to find out, how do I pay attention to a thought? Or even like, how do I feel a breath? What is that? And so there's a kind of focus on trying to figure out, what is a thought? What is a feeling? What is a sensation? How do I know I feel my breath? And then there can be a time of focusing on practicing that, putting into practice the fact that I can continually, again and again, discover out-breath happening. We get into a swing with it. And we bump up against the walls when we notice where it's not just me discovering the out-breath. It's me doing the out-breath. And so then we just feel how that doing feels, which might feel like dense head. And we feel around for less doing or non-doing. And we, again, it can feel like struggle, it can feel like confusion, being lost. Like, maybe it helps to go to the belly, I'm not sure yet. Good. So the title of the talk is Getting Lost. In the sense of like really getting, like we get lost. It's a good thing to get. When I was about 18, 30 years ago, I had the chance to dance. I like to dance for 24 hours. And so I signed up. Like, yes, yes, please. And it just so happened to be a fundraising thing that you could dance for 24 hours, and people would say, okay, for every hour you dance, I'll give you $1 or whatever. And I wasn't really interested in the fundraising, I was interested in dancing. Having a place, there would be music and people, and you could dance for 24 hours. But my roommate in college was into fundraising, especially when she found out what the prize was for whoever raised the most money, which was a trip to Bermuda, which is an island. Maybe it's famous here, I don't know. And also because we were first year students, there was another prize as well, which was a television. But Angela wanted the Bermuda, a trip to Bermuda. So she said, you do the dancing, I'll give the money. And she was the youngest, she is the youngest of 9 children. And her older sisters, mostly, are travel agents. And so they all networked, and we won. The television and the trip to Bermuda. And it was spring break, which is too early to go to Bermuda. It was really cold. And we were in a cute little house. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't like a really touristy hotel or something. It was a family's house. And we, part of the deal was like a cruise. And this kind of, it was all like, okay, whatever. It's too cold to swim. It's a beautiful island. So what I mostly remember about the time in Bermuda, other than the fact that Peter, Paul, and Mary was staying next door in the house, it was very surreal, was going jogging. And that meant I could go away from like the planned trip in Bermuda, where they were taking us. And I like to do that when it's safe, to go jogging or walking and go get lost. So the most alive memory for me of this whole time on the island was at the moment that I was really lost. And there was just a field on a hill, and there was a house with laundry hanging outside. That's all. It was so much more alive than trip to Bermuda. Trip for two, my roommate arranged for it to be for three so her cousin could come. So going out of what the plan is or what the trip to Bermuda is supposed to be like, and actually meeting a couple of real people and their dog. Is the kind of moment that really stays. It's like really worthwhile to go get lost. Yesterday I talked about the gift of the Indian knife there on the church bench, and also somehow feeling how life is given, which is rather than having to be deserved or earned. And that means coming to feel how given, what is given, what is it that's given? To discover what's given. And to discover given means it's already passed to you. It's not even really to figure out how to receive the gift, but to get there where it already happens that life is given to you. And that means to come in contact with forces in the psyche that are way more powerful than how we know ourselves so far. They kick us out all day long. And I just want to briefly mention some of the classic signs of going deeper, signs of coming in touch with what kicks you out. What kicks us out? What's kicked everybody out for thousands of years? So it's not such a big deal. It's not just you. In a way, part of the discovery. We don't just discover the aliveness of that spring of the breath happening, the spring of live experience happening. We discover also that there are forces in the psyche and the world that if we try to meet them in a way that we think is direct, we will and we do lose. Just like Willow John just had to walk across the countryside and follow the guy around, reminding him that he actually could sign the papers to let Little Tree go home. So along the way, we find that it seems that our way is blocked, and we feel stuck and helpless. And then there's different things that happen when we get the feeling of stuck and helpless. Like anger, or wanting, or spacing out, like, what? Who, me? It matters that I stay in the hall? It matters that I'm here? No. Restlessness and doubt. And I want to mention the images that Gautam Buddha gave for these states. They're so juicy. These are states that happen on the way in. And it's good to be able to recognize what on the way in feels like. It feels like stuck. But really, really stuck. Like an intensity of stuck. And then some kind of squeezing movement pushes us through the doorway, kind of. And it feels awful, usually. So the state of wanting, which is the state of not enough. So this morning we had the chance to hear of a state of not enough. Like, the thought, but is it just a thought? Belief, is it just a belief? That the thought that possesses me, that I have to earn the right to rest, or I have to do something to deserve rest, is our already great example from this morning. Of wanting and restlessness, I could say. Not enough. I'm not enough yet to deserve rest. To accept that the gift is already given. To go on from there and give. Be giving. The images of wanting and not enough is of being in debt. So the feeling that I don't have enough resources, or I don't have enough of something, and I've got to borrow it from somewhere outside. And so what I'm living on to survive is not mine. I have to borrow my parents' ideas, or my culture's ideas, or the teacher's ideas, or the teacher's way of walking, or whatever, to make myself okay enough. And then freedom from that not enough is like having a business that makes enough money, not only to live on, but to also support others. And so if we don't start imagining all our own businesses, but just get the feeling difference. The feeling that what you're using to live, to survive, doesn't even belong to you. It's not actually natural to you. It didn't emerge from your own circumstance. It's not really part of your way. You're just getting by until maybe later on you can live your life. And then not being in debt, but having a way of earning enough, so enough comes through to fill and overflow. The practice of letting your own way of loving life emerge and fill and overflow. So that's where we make experiments of, okay, my head is heavy, so let's see. Maybe there's something not quite mine about the way I'm practicing right now. Or more likely for many of you today, you feel like you're just a thinking machine and you don't find any off button or any unplugging. And the pressure on you to try to make it stop so that then you could be okay. Then you could kind of feel where you are and feel what might be appropriate. But not until you get that machine off. So that's more likely where many of you are feeling today. That's the normal way today for the first full day. So don't give up, in a way, but give up the pressure. Don't give up feeling around for what feels alive, maybe in the belly, maybe in the feet. Don't give up for what feels like it helps the alarm system come down. And then, wow, here you are for a second, and then the borders go up again. But that 1 second, that's good, that's enough. You're out of debt. Just let yourself feel that feeling of the borders went down and you saw the tree. You felt that part of an out-breath and how enough that was, that it still is enough. Or there was so much sadness or anger or fear, And for a moment, you felt it, that intensity, that electricity, that burning or that heaviness, as another kind of direct experience that also shows me how much is not what I think I am. Like, I'm not in control of that. It's going on. In addition to not enough, and sometimes often at the same time, there's negativity, which they call ill will, which I really like. And the image is of being ill, being sick. And my food doesn't agree with me. So that kind of mood. My food doesn't agree with me, and I can't really feel at ease. Everything sucks, kind of. And I love the detail there. I'm sick and my food doesn't agree with me. So there's a feeling that nourishment can't actually happen in that state. And freedom from that, which also happens, is like being well. And if you've ever been that sick, that you are so happy to be able to stand up and walk. That's how glad we are when ill will. And really to feel that gladness, like let that gladness set for a while and take root. Feel what it feels like where. And then the dullness and spaciness is like slavery. We're not allowed to go where we want when we want. Freedom from slavery. Prison. The dullness and spaciness is like being in prison. And you can't get out, and you can't go where you want. And getting out of prison. Restlessness is like slavery. Someone else is telling you what to do all the time. And you have to do it. There's no rest allowed. I think that's a good description anyway for those thoughts that possess us. So another image, like being a slave, it's like being possessed. Being possessed by one of those thoughts like, I have to deserve rest. It's like somebody else walks me around. And then doubt is, we are rich. We have plenty, but we have to cross a desert. And it doesn't say why that's a bad thing in the text. We can guess. Maybe there's no water, and maybe there's some bad elements out there who are ready to take our riches. But for us, the main thing is feeling, what is that impression in the body-mind? Of feeling like what's most precious. So maybe I have had some experience of what I really love in life or what's important. And I'm afraid that it could be gone. It's shaky. And at the same time, it's dry. And it's probably really hot in the day and really cold in the night. So extremes and the dryness. This wonderful example that we had first of the more mental kind of paying attention that does often bring a headache or a heaviness in the head or whatever. As an example of what I mean by dry. And so then we notice dry. and feel, okay, let's... And then that can help us recognize when thoughts about maybe I'm not good enough, maybe this practice isn't good enough, when they come as an attack, it can be very drying, very dry in the same way. We lose track of our juiciness. The juiciness comes from, even if there's no guarantee, even if this doesn't work, I gamble. And it's not a little bet, actually. I gamble it all. And maybe, like Marco Polo and his dad and his uncle when they were coming home from the first big trip. And it wasn't robbers in the desert that they were worried about. It was the like customs officials in the country just before home that they'd heard were taking stuff. So they put their most precious stuff inside their clothing, closest to home. And indeed, everything else was taken. So feeling the how good it feels when you know the feeling of appreciation or gratitude. Keeping it close to home. And going step by step. So these things, there's really not a way around it. They will come. It's not like if you're really, really good, you won't experience ill will or debt or dullness. Where you're just in the middle of a sentence that you really need to say and you forgot what you were saying, that kind of thing. Or here on a deep rest retreat, it can be confusing because I'm saying rest. And you're like, okay, when I rest, I'm getting a little pretty spacey. But really feeling for the, what is the deepest avoidance? Because the spaciness dullness is a kind of sneaky avoidance. What was I saying? Oh, never mind. It must not be important. If I don't remember, that's what people actually say. We've been taught to say that. Never mind. Sometimes it wasn't important. And we start by practicing not ever even starting those sentences that aren't important. There's more energy and juice for when we are in the middle of a really important sentence or insight that we there's the stay. So there's the feeling stuck that can feel like being in debt or ill will or prison or slavery or being rich and crossing the desert. And it feels like there's no way out. That's one of the main ways to remember, okay, this is an attack of one of these. I'm being possessed by one of these very familiar states. That is a good sign. That's the doorway. I seem to be not quite fitting through this doorway, but and so it could be we've got to take something off to get through the doorway. Each time a little bit more. We've got to take off that more thinking kind of attention. And leave room with the help of that thinking attention for some other kind of awareness that is already. I don't have to grow a new thing. I have to grow the chance, the possibility, the action of kind of slightly uncovering something slightly hidden. Uh, another kind of awareness. I just want to give one more example of a poet who translated a part of the story of Odysseus, who was a guy on a journey like us. One day when I was abandoned by everything, do you remember that day, those days? One day when I was abandoned by everything, and a great sorrow, great sadness, fell slowly on my soul. Walking across fields without salvation. I pulled a branch of some unknown bush. I broke it and brought it to my upper lip. I understood immediately that humankind is innocent, that we are innocent. That living in a way that stays true to what's true, he calls paradise, is not nostalgia, is not remembering something from long ago, nor much less reward for doing it right or working hard enough or whatever. So I just want to really emphasize a few aspects in that experience. I think probably we recognize that feeling of being abandoned by everything. There's something in there of giving up hope and fear. It's a kind of giving up that's important, that we can't really do on purpose. But when it's happening, we could recognize that certain things that are heavy are finally allowed to be heavy and fall to the ground and rest. And then, that's not the end. Then there is something that stays, that we can discover. So it's a kind of giving up, although what I mostly want to say to you today is don't give up. Give up the pressure. Give up the idea that you are going to be able to be with every breath, or even five, if that's not happening. But stay true. There's an Indian word, satyagraha. Satya means truth, and graha is home. And I don't mean truth in the form of an idea. I mean truth that happens when you've given up, but somehow or other you're walking across a field. So you tried everything from what you had to try with, you thought. But somehow you're walking across the field, and somehow the world still is a world. And the way that there's communication that we were not aware of is still happening. We walk across the field, and somehow, not because we want to get something from it, not because it's a nice bush, my favorite bush, or I hate that bush. It just so happens that we take a leaf or a branch. It just so happens something we even could call intelligence, though my conscious experience is despair. Finally, enough giving up so that some real intelligence can move the hand to the upper lip. And then he just says that. Actually, she, Olga Braumer, the translator of the poet, just describes the scent as acerbic. So let's say it wasn't so sweet. It was bright, let's say. The aliveness in it came across, could come across. Just like the bullfrog in the pocket could come across. So feeling for doing our best and trying and knowing at some point we're going to come to what feels like a dead end and giving up what may happen. And that could be exactly on time and not out of our way. And yet, now abandoning all that way and feeling for what's the next step. But that wasn't wrong. Staying tuned and then starting to live in satya, in that kind of truth that the smell of the branch of the bush can make come across. It's not a word. It's a meeting. It's a meeting of what seemed to be two things, and then turns out it's not really two things. And so we got lost. The part of us that thought it was in charge and driving the thing gets lost there. Thank goodness. And allows discovering to happen. And in that losing that old way, and especially how that old way of doing has been a protection for our pain, the really inner pain, the fear of our vulnerability. So the way that our way of doing has been a protection of that, as that starts to get lost, be less interesting, be uninteresting, the process of shaking it off can be a lot like Willow John in the church, laughing and then crying, shaking, sitting on the ground in the back of the church. It can also feel a lot like any of those states of debt, ill will, prison, slavery, desert. If only I knew more about modern physics, quantum physics, I'm sure it's so similar. It's energy states that happen. And as that old containment of our energy, of our life energy, is known to be too small. That old way of paying attention with my thinking mind, for example. Or thinking that I've got to deserve rest, and then believing that. Going against my satyagraha. Going against my staying true to the givenness, the giving. as the energy is released from that old small shape, things happen. Like shaking, crying, laughing, feeling explosive. And if we can take it as just still more signs that we're still discovering what and who we are, when we're surprised by what can happen in our mind and in our body, how great to really have it confirmed that I'm not what I thought. I'm not an angry person. Or I'm not a restless person. Or I don't cry. Why am I? Or whatever. So all the other practices are to help us tune into what's important and stay tuned to that no matter what the circumstance. Because that's home, because that's where we feel really alive. And we find our innocence. And then even if I'm right, we don't bother to go so far about being angry and then we just stay home. In the satyagraha, in that living rest. And gradually, although the process itself is not always pleasant, gradually even the body comes into that process and loves it. Just like we can come to love the pain of a massage or a stretch. We come to know it's safe, it's good. We can feel the goodness even when it's tough, it's hard, painful. And we start to get to notice the difference between the painfulness of releasing and growing up and coming into that fluid, staying true. It's not always convenient. You can know the difference between that being turned inside out and the pain of just covering up. Is there any question or anything to share so far? Over here. Yes, please. So she says she has a question about the technique. And first, let me make sure by saying to you what I heard you say, that I heard you right. Then they can hear you also. Sometimes she feels very strong sensations, and she's able to really kind of get into that zone, she called it, really being with that. And then sometimes it gets overwhelming, it's too much. Including a feeling of choking and sadness, you said? Yeah. And it seems to then be all the time. And so then how to, like, to feel a breath in that? Like what? Is that the question? Or what? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So whether to stay with it or how to get out of it or how to get past it. So great question, and many ways are needed And it is hard to know at the time which one. Mostly, I would suggest probably don't go to those sensations for now. And then they will come. So it's kind of like making a nest, or I have a poem I want to share anyway that fits perfectly here. And it's also something that Little Tree had, and his people had. They had their secret place. And it's actually a place in their landscape ecosystem that is their place, but it's their secret place. And mostly no one else knows what is your secret place. For us, the secret place, if it can be in your landscape, fantastic. And even here, we're in a landscape and there's much to be discovered. And there could be that freedom for the child to wander and find where feels good to be. And certainly inside, both physically and also in the sense of ideas that you resonate with, that give a feeling of alignment. When I feel at peace or well, what do I feel and where? That starts to become a secret place. Daring to wish myself to be well and giving enough so that there's a momentum there, it starts to help build the secret place. Knowing what is joyful for you and also doing that, it also starts to, it's like feeding. It's almost like we have to regrow in our landscape enough trees so that it can be secret. And there does need to be. So as we let our habitual protection, hiding, escape, pretending, come apart, we still do need places of intimacy where we feel safe so that we can actually notice that there is love and giving and nourishment, and enough, and sometimes stillness, sometimes movement, and responsiveness, which are all the other side of those five states I said before. It seems to be very important for most of us, the aspect of friendship, having at least one person that can really see, meet, walk with sometimes. It seems to remind us of that in ourselves, a place we can go to. So, and when it does happen sometimes that those sensations are so strong or those thoughts are so strong, the mind does go there and does get caught in that current. We can notice that it's partly the sensations are easy to feel because they're strong. They're kind of actually sensations that are designed to get my attention. And also, there's been a lot of practice of letting attention go there. Attention should go there in our fearful way of living. And so the effort of practicing tuning to what isn't trying to get my attention and what I haven't practiced attending to, if we can just accept, it's going to be a long road. So it doesn't need to feel so frustrating. Because I know in advance, any single time I can hear a whisper of the bird while this choking is happening is a huge deal. And it starts to be enough. It starts to be discovering the flow. So at least if we can understand that mostly it's not my job to go there and try to dig around right now. And trusting, finding your own experience. In my experience, I really find it's trustworthy, the timing of when it does come, when the secret place is ready. And I have much more practice of tuning to the subtle intelligence. And that fact of, I call it feeling, being loved or being at home. But like the fact that this life is for you, even when it feels like it's been taken away or you have to earn it or something. In many cultures, there are still rites of passage. And in many culture, or in the more mainstream culture, we're losing that. In the spiritual path, there's many rites of passage, there's many passages. And if we can keep, when we feel stuck, get the sense this is probably time to pause and there's a rite of passage that I need to allow. That mostly is not going to be already set up and established for you. We need to actually kind of invent it, discover it. Because we're not here in a tradition that marks the phases. And there's the good side of that. It can really be organic in its own timing with the joy of discovery. That now, this is what it feels like to discover belly awareness. It feels like I'm clueless. It feels like I'm starting over again. Or this is what it feels like to discover okayness. Even though at least half of me is pretty freaked out that I don't know why I'm crying or whatever. So in one of the Native American peoples, there was a rite of passage of going into the landscape, not that they ever left it, actually, but going out from the settlement and kind of being placed. And there's a poet named David White who wrote a poem based on that, and it's called Lost. And it starts with two words, stand still. So when we feel stuck, helpless, desperate, despair, there could be that tendency to just run around and either pretend like I know what I'm doing because I don't, or to try to find out what I'm supposed to be doing because I don't. And if it could just be because I don't know what I'm doing or what's happening, stand still. Stand still. The trees ahead and the bushes beside you are not lost. So, in the moment of freak out, there's a tendency to feel alone. We're inside our walls, inside our shell. And so, stand still. Already we notice there's trees ahead and bushes beside. And it's already different. Wherever you are is called here. And you must treat it as a powerful stranger. Must ask permission to know it and be known. The beauty of these moments, these like cracking points where we have the chance to know that we don't know. That's the chance if we accept. Is that we find that we are here already, and that's not the end. There's a feeling of completion of like, ah, I'm already here. Here is here. But not stopping, not giving up there, staying true, like, okay, and here is a powerful stranger. So even if I'm shaking, because what I notice is, although there's friendly trees ahead and friendly bushes beside, wherever I am, here, is powerful and a stranger. I'm allowed to stay with my not knowing and feel the power of this place. And not protect myself with some kind of thinking that I know again. Not picking up another shell. So even though now that I'm here, I feel, wow, the aliveness, like the moment of smelling the bush. We can feel that it's strong. And we must, the poet says, we must ask permission. And so this is where, if we could practice a feeling that humility is not the end of the world, it's not failure. In the same poem of the bush that smells in a bright way, with such immediacy, bringing out that insight. Just before that walk through the fields of no salvation, the poet says, it took me so long to discover humility. Partly because the people who taught me humility taught me that it was the other side, the opposite of pride. That's why it was so hard to find. I had bad directions. The map wasn't correct. So humility is not a put down. It's coming to rest. Though I don't know. And though this is powerful. And not my power. And then we start to feel the holy ground phenomenon. But what happens there is, we're asking permission what? Not to be allowed to be here. I'm already here. Asking permission to know it and be known. So for now, that means whatever strong thing is going on, there's still here. There is here, and you are. And you don't know how. You don't know what here is, and you don't know how you got here. And you don't know how to get yourself more here. And that's good. You're not supposed to know how. It still remains to be discovered. Now. And so just that gesture of noticing it's powerful to be here, not knowing. It's actually not so helpless. Though the power is not mine. And if we can just let, how good to be humble. That means that giving up of the pressure, giving up of hope and fear. Giving up of trying to know how to handle, how to tangle with this force and how to get it roped down. This choking or this need to deserve or whatever. We just let ourselves be that tiny bit less self-absorbed, that we wake up to the world and we ask permission to know here and be known by here, to find our transparency. to find the intimacy that is enough. The forest breathes. Listen. It answers. I have made this place around you, so the forest answers. I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again. Staying here. So this is in terms of technique where we do have our places, actual places. Inside, in the mind, and outside. Places also means spaces with a person where there's chemistry towards awakening. And we can go away and come back to help us remember that there could be ease, though I'm uncomfortable, ease, though I'm freaking out. The forest breathes. Listen. So listen to what we've never listened to before. And it would be easy to say, well, there's not a forest. I know the forest breathes, but I live in the city or whatever. So the city breathes. Life breathes. Listen. It answers. I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again, saying, here. So that's the practice of coming back. And not just saying here, but feeling that impression and resonating with that sense of allowed to be here. No two trees are the same to raven, kind of bird, like a crow. No two branches are the same to wren, another kind of songbird. So that's where it's not only then about me and my practice and coming home to where I feel safe so that I can unwind and have some cool insights, but the world is part of it. So not only do I discover inside myself resources I didn't know I had, the teacher says something and I realize I know that, or that's not true for me, or we have our own teacher. But also we start noticing things outside of me that are relevant, that are part of the next step, the next phase, the next kind of awareness, the next way of living with those forces that are beyond our control. And a communication happens that's not looking for a sign and trying to figure out what it means. It's just intimacy in the world as well as in ourselves. But it means really noticing something you never noticed before, even in your house, even in your mind. If what a tree or bush does is lost on you, you're surely lost. So that is just an encouragement to give up the pressure so that we can stay true. If we notice the world is lost on me, we need some help of some kind to lose what needs to be lost, the old way, so there's room to discover what's ready for us. Stand still. The forest knows, we can say life knows where you are. You must let it find you. So we don't know what to do, don't know how, don't know what we are, we don't know what's going on. And that's a helpful place where we can lose our old ways of doing and approaching. And losing the old ways, the discovery happens so naturally that we hardly hear it happen. So part of what we can find out is that what's given is not just like our life force or that preciousness in our life that's even deeper than the physical life force, physical body life force, something more precious, but also the way is given. And so that finding that receptive, giving up but staying true. Not trying to find life in the way I thought I had to, or should, or earned, or whatever. Letting it find you. May all beings live in peace. May our life and our loves and our practice be dedicated to the momentum towards liberation for all.